People are surging madly around him, trying to shake hands with him through the car windows, trying to get a sight of him.
For much of his public career, the umbrella was his one inseparable prop.
Giving a great welcome.
And the combined cult of Chamberlain and his brolly reached its apogee in the immediate aftermath of the Munich Agreement of 1938.
We regard the agreement signed last night as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples never to go to war with one another again.
As Prime Minister's props go, the Chamberlain umbrella was, for a time, one of the most powerful and potent. But as has so often been the case with such artifacts, it was later turned decisively and devastatingly against him. Over the years, British Prime Ministers have often taken up props as part of their image, which have later come to define them, like Churchill's cigar or Mrs. Thatcher's handbag. In this series, I'm going to look at the significance of these props of power, what they mean and what they become, and what happens when Prime Ministers lose control of their image, when their chosen props take on a hostile meaning, very different from their original intentions. I begin my series with Neville Chamberlain and his umbrella. Born in Birmingham in 1869, Neville Chamberlain was the second son of Joseph Chamberlain by his second wife. Neville's father became a charismatic mayor of Birmingham. He was always identified in the public mind with the orchid which was invariably in his buttonhole and with the monocle that he also sported. Joe Chamberlain may never have got to the very top in national politics, but he certainly had his props. He knew that they mattered and he knew how to use them. These lessons were well learned by his son Neville, who, unlike his father, made it to 10 Downing Street. After completing his education at the local college and following a disastrous stint vainly trying to grow sisal in the Bahamas, Neville settled down to a life of business and politics in Birmingham, where he served as Lord Mayor during the First World War. By the time Neville was approaching 50, he was still virtually unknown outside the West Midlands. But at the general election of 1918, he was elected to Parliament as one of Birmingham's MPs, and he soon established a reputation as a well-prepared debater with a strong commitment to social reform.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
If you can follow me downstairs and I can show you the umbrellas.
That would be excellent.
In 1924, Neville Chamberlain was bought an umbrella by his wife, Anne, from Thomas Brigg & Sons Limited, who sold them in St James's Piccadilly. Umbrellas had first been popularised in Britain during the 18th century, and Thomas Brigg & Sons was established in London by the 1820s. European royalty and heads of state bought their brollies from Brigg, and so did the Chamberlains.
The silk is much more traditional than the nylon canopy.
I'm here at Swain Aidney Brigg with Lily Pauselk, their retail manager, and I'm holding in my hand exactly the same sort of umbrella which Chamberlain took with him to Munich, which this shop sold back in the 1930s and which it's still selling today.
What we have here is a Malacca handle with the silk cover and its gilded collar with Briggs engraved onto it.
So this is a serious piece of craftsmanship.
It is. I mean, everything is done by hand, finished off by hand. We provide a service for repairing and remaking of our umbrellas.
So if the silk wears out or if it gets torn, then the whole of the umbrella could be recovered.
They can.
Which is what Neville Chamberlain used to do.
Yes.
Are these umbrellas still popular today?
Very popular. Nowadays, the Malacca handle tends to be known for like a city umbrella. So a lot of gentlemen in the city would buy the Malacca umbrella. It's much more classic.
In May 1937, Neville Chamberlain succeeded Stanley Baldwin as Prime Minister.
Umbrellas to men, men's umbrella lady, umbrellas.
By then, he had become associated in the public mind with his umbrella. But it was seen by his admirers and his detractors in very different ways. To his supporters, Neville Chamberlain was as trustworthy and reliable as his brolly. And the policy of appeasing the dictators, which he pursued so single-mindedly during the late 1930s, was the only way to preserve peace and to keep the German bombs from raining down on British cities.
Pitter-patter-patter, pitter-patter-patter, here comes the rain.
But to his opponents, Chamberlain appeared very differently. He was cold, arrogant, and increasingly out of touch with his colleagues. He was, according to Lloyd George,
a good mayor of Birmingham in a lean year.
And furthermore,
Mr. Chamberlain views everything through the wrong end of a municipal drainpipe.
It was a cutting put-down, but either way, it somehow seemed entirely appropriate that Chamberlain should be associated with that most provincial and pooterish of artifacts. For Neville was, like his brolly, austere, uptight and tightly furled. He looked like an undertaker with his tailcoat, wing collar and his February face.
He'll patch up your troubles, then go on his way.
On the 29th of September 1938, dressed in his customary attire and carrying his rolled umbrella, Neville Chamberlain departed for Munich by air to meet with Hitler, Mussolini and the French Premier Daladier in a last-minute attempt to settle the crisis over Czechoslovakia, which had been brewing ever since Nazi Germany had annexed Austria earlier in the year.
When I come back...
On his departure, Chamberlain spoke to the assembled crowd.
I hope I may be able to say, as Hotspur says in Henry IV, out of this nettle danger, we pluck this flower, safety.
2 days later, Chamberlain returned to London, having signed an agreement whereby Germany would occupy the Sudetenland.
Must be one of the most wonderful things that has ever happened to Neville Chamberlain.
And he proclaimed to jubilant crowds that war had been averted.
Mr. Chamberlain said that he believes it is peace for our time as he looks round on the crowd of us standing here below.
The Czechs hadn't been consulted, and nor were they represented at the Munich conference. But with such rare exceptions as Winston Churchill, the reaction of the British public was one of ecstatic relief that war had been successfully prevented. Chamberlain's umbrella had been miraculously transformed into an olive branch, which had proved mightier than the sword, and it became the symbol of that triumph. It was, as one admiring contemporary observed,
an umbrella under which all the peoples of the world can find shelter, sanity, and peace, which will protect you and your children from the threats of these warmongering socialist leaders.
In the ensuing weeks, Chamberlain was deluged with letters and gifts, including, predictably, several more umbrellas. And this essential adjunct to appeasement became celebrated and accessorized in all sorts of ways.
There's a stately gentleman we love so.
In Britain, America, across Europe and in India, umbrella sales increased dramatically. In Paris, the latest dance craze involved hooking your chosen partner with an umbrella.
God bless you, Mr. Chamberlain. We're all mighty proud of you. You look swell holding your umbrella. All the world loves a wonderful fella.
In London, shops displayed sugar umbrellas in their windows, and a new cocktail in the Prime Minister's honour was predictably called the Umbrella.
God bless you, Mr. Chamberlain.
And in Italy, a museum asked Chamberlain if they might acquire his Munich brolly, but he replied that he'd had so many similar requests that he was unable to comply. Such was the excitement that one newspaper commented,
in the continental mind, the Premier's umbrella has eclipsed Lord Baldwin's pipe as an expression of all that is most British.
There was even a joke doing the rounds that Neville Chamberlain should write his response to Hitler's Mein Kampf, entitled Mein Gamp, the colloquial term for an umbrella. Yet this remarkable few months in which Chamberlain and his umbrella were equally triumphant would turn out to be short-lived. Hitler initially thought that he'd been outmanoeuvred by Chamberlain at Munich, and he rapidly came to despise the person he called that silly old man with his umbrella. But Hitler's more considered view was that Chamberlain's willingness to continue with a policy of appeasement showed that Britain had become decadent and lacked the will and resolve to remain a great power. The Führer even mocked Chamberlain's trademark brolly as a symbol of his feebleness, and became fond of making jokes about the umbrella pacifism of the once so imposing British Empire.
When we shout, God bless you, Mr. Chamberlain.
2 months later, German troops marched into what was left of Czechoslovakia. Prague was occupied and the Munich Agreement was torn up. It would be Poland's turn next, and the Second World War was only a few months away. Almost until the last minute, Neville Chamberlain believed that peace would be preserved. But as the international situation and his own reputation both dramatically deteriorated during the summer of 1939, the symbolism and meaning of his umbrella were also correspondingly changed. Instead of being an admired emblem of decency, honesty and goodwill, Chamberlain's brolly was now ridiculed as an indication of his prim, provincial and naive gullibility. Where once his umbrella had embodied high-minded strength, it was now associated with self-righteous weakness. In July 1939, the Edinburgh Evening News noted,
Mr. Chamberlain's umbrella, last year a symbol of peace, has now become an object of ridicule. There is much laboured humour at its expense, especially from cartoonists.
Chamberlain's umbrella was mercilessly seized on as the emblem of his mistaken policies. Late in 1939, David Lowe of the Evening Standard drew a cartoon which featured a tiger covered in Nazi swastikas, hungrily consuming an umbrella to which was attached the label Appeasement. As the Second World War progressed, Hitler continued to mock umbrella pacifism. He even named his bombing campaign of Chamberlain's hometown Birmingham Regenschirm, which is German for umbrella.
I'm singing and dancing in the rain.
Since the end of the Second World War, the umbrella that Chamberlain made initially famous and subsequently notorious has come to be regarded as the symbol of other policies deemed to be failed, feeble and weakly accommodating. In 1974, Michael Cummings in the Sunday Express portrayed Harold Wilson holding a Chamberlainite umbrella, deploring his recent capitulation to the trade unions. And in 1990, in the same newspaper, Cummings depicted President George Bush Sr. as another appeaser, complete with umbrella, in what seemed to be his supine attitude to Saddam Hussein of Iraq. Chamberlain's umbrella diplomacy at Munich had turned out to be an unmitigated disaster. How different things might have been for him and for some of those who came after if Chamberlain had left his brolly at home. Thank you.